You're listening to a podcast of the Winners and Losers radio program on Enlightened Radio, which broadcasts regularly on Fridays at 7 a.m. on www.enlightenradio.org, or if you want to go straight to the player, player.enlightenradio.org. Our podcasts are usually up same day as the live broadcast, and they are hosted at podcasts.enlightenradio.org and also at democracyroad.podbean.com. Welcome. Oh, anyway, welcome, Karen. Good morning.
Hi, Karen.
Good morning. Good morning, Bonte and Michael. It's so good to see both of you. I feel like I've known you forever. One thing that has come to light in this series that John and I have done is how much effect we have on people, even when we don't realize it. And you have had such an effect on my life and my growth and my healing. And I've never been able to say thank you for that. So thank you. Yeah, I'm really, really excited that you're here. And when we start recording, are we recording yet, John?
Well, one of the recorders is working, but let's start the other one now, because that way I don't make a mistake later in 10 minutes into the program, say, oh, my God, I forgot to start the recorder. You know, and I do two of them so that in case one fails, I end up having the other. There we go.
No. Recording in progress.
There you go. We're recording. Welcome to the Winners and Losers radio program on Fridays, 7 o'clock in the morning. Karen Valentine, why don't you take this one away?
I would be really happy to. I am so excited this morning to have join us Bonte Sujatha and Michael Franczak. Am I saying that right, Michael?
You are.
Okay. And I will let them introduce themselves, but I am just going to share as an introduction a little bit about how special it is to have both of them join us this morning. I have been a longtime resident of Shepherdstown, and as many of you that listen to our podcast know, we have been exploring some topics of spirituality and community. And to me, that is such a broad term, even though my intimate community in Shepherdstown is so important to me, my community goes much broader. And a big part of that has been the work that Bonte Sujatha does. And I am going to let him explain some of his work that is now stemming from his work at the Blue Lotus Temple. And but Bonte struck me as somebody when I first started following him, just a people's Buddhist. A Buddhist monk for the people, having grown up 12 years Catholic school and being afraid of my priests and am I doing everything right? And, you know, I'm clearly a sinner and, you know, kind of that fearful little Catholic girl. When I left that religion and turned more in to a Buddhist path, I felt accepted. I wasn't scared anymore. And then when I started following Bonte, he's just like a real dude, you know, he's just right there with all of us and has really embraced Western culture and honestly given a lot of us who know his work a path that helps us with the chaos of the culture within we live. And so for that, I am grateful. And for me personally, you have helped me so much through times where that were traumatic, some of them life situations, and one was a health situation where I faced my mortality. And that is when I really turned to your morning coffee wisdoms to get me through the day. And I was always inspired every morning. And it reminded me to take time to meditate and do my practice, because even though I was facing a lot of loss and pain, I wanted joy back. And you have a great way of just very simply leading people back to a path of joy. And I am grateful for that. Yes. So from there, I am going to let you talk, and then we'll just have, you know, just kind of natural dialogue conversation. And Michael, I would like you to share how your bond with Bonte began as well, because I gather there's a story there.
Okay, I go first. My name is Bonte Sujata, as you know. I was born and raised in Sri Lanka. Age 10, I left home, and age 11, I became a Buddhist monk. And now 40 plus years, I'm practicing as a monk. So now I'm out of Sri Lanka more than 30 years now. I used to live in Australia. Then I came to United States. First, I was in Detroit, where I met Michael. So Michael will explain those things. And so then I moved to Chicago. Then I started the Blue Lotus Buddhist Temple. It is all Catholic church. So later they changed their tradition. It's called the Unitarian Universalist Church. So I was teaching with them and their community meditation 9 years. So 9 years later, they announced they are going to sell the church. So I announced to people they are going to sell the church. I don't know what I'm going to do. Then they said, okay, let's try it. You know, then everybody announced that one Saturday morning, church is going to sell, you know. So one lady came to me and said she's ready to donate. And she donated 100,000, and all the money came in a few weeks. And within a few weeks, I made the most of the money. And then I got the building. Now I'm a Buddhist monk. I have a church. So... After I get this church, people are thinking it is a historical building. 120 years mean, according to the history of the United States, is old. And so people were thinking, people didn't make any comments. People were kind of watching and observing what I'm going to do in this historical building. So I think people were thinking, you know, I'm taking everything down, their historical background, and make it a Buddhist temple. So then I was thinking to myself, if I do that, more than the Jesus, I'm so disrespecting the Buddha and his teaching. So therefore, I don't want to do that. So then I was thinking, last 9 years, I used to live with Jesus. Rest of my life, I can live with him, no problem. So what I did, I left the Jesus where he was at the building. Then I built another 10 feet tall, beautiful, gigantic white Buddha statue to the temple from Sri Lanka. Now we have one side, 10 feet tall Buddha standing, other side 14 feet tall Jesus standing. In front of them, Mother Mary is standing. So we have all those three spiritual leaders together practicing loving kindness and mindfulness. We have 386 meditation classes per year. So we have retreats, we have other activities, other all the holistic approach and those activities at the temple. So now I'm traveling around the world more than 200 days per year, which I never planned to do that. Mm-hmm. And so whatever I did outside of Woodstock, you know, little town called Woodstock, and outside of Chicago, North suburb, little by little, I was teaching to people. Then people start moving around the world. So every time when people are moving around the different places, different states, different countries, always they invited me to come and join and do the teaching. So, however, I did my job nicely and kindly and compassionately. People receive the teaching really well, like Karen said. And so then people took me to the world. That means people took me to the world means for me, people took the Buddha or his teaching to the world. So now I'm doing my work. I'm very busy right now in my life. And sometimes people asking me, Bonte, when do you sleep? Do you have time to rest? You're always working, working, working. My answer is, I'm not working. I'm just playing. I just play. That's how I try to see. But as a human being, I feel tired and exhausted, of course. But end of the day, before I go to bed, I feel I'm happy, I'm content because of my practice, because of my spiritual journey, taking care of myself. There are so many people in the world right now sleeping peacefully, lovingly, and kindly because of my journey, my spiritual journey. So that's what I'm doing right now. I think now Michael can talk about a little bit about yourself, right, Michael?
Well, did you want to follow up on any of that before I were to begin?
I just wanted to say it's interesting. I did not know the story about the building and about your respect for the Jesus statue and Mary. As a little girl, Mary statues were always very special to me. And it is interesting, my path to Buddhism started when I actually, in a time of major change and disruption in my life, I went to the Catholic priest that baptized all three of my daughters, and I was going through a divorce. And I said, I can't do this anymore. I can't pretend, you know, we had a long, like 2-hour conversation. And it was my Catholic priest in the little town of Shepherdstown, who is a very open-minded Catholic priest, who gave me as a gift, he left on my doorstep, Thich Nhat Hanh's Living Buddha, Living Christ, and Jesus and Buddha as brothers. So right. That is what your story reminded me of. And those right. were the two books that jump-started my journey.
And also I want to add something else, because as a Buddhist monk, I'm not teaching a religion. If people have a religion, I'm respecting to that, they can follow that, because I'm not teaching a religion. I'm not converting people to Buddhists, become a Buddhist. I never ever, as even one person at the Blue Lotus Temple, become a Buddhist, because we don't have such thing. So sometimes American people need some recognition, they need a paper certificate, I converted to the Buddhism, something like that. That's American nature. Right. So I made up something for them to be comfortable. Then I'm always reminding people, don't become a Buddhist. No need to become a Buddhist. If you can, be a Buddha. If you can. That's what I'm asking. So therefore, if they have a religion, I'm always guiding them to respect it and practice it if you feel comfortable. And most of the religious places are open to Sunday morning service, but our temple is closed Sunday morning. Why? Most of the people who come to the Blue Lotus Temple, they go to church. So then I want to support that. So why I'm keeping it that way? Because I can see, I can observe, when I see the world, you know, wars in the world, and I can see most of the people killing each other name of the same God. Most of the wars involve religions. So I think religions bring peace to people's life and bring people together as a one community. But modern world, I can see, because of the religion, people are always separating themselves. So when we have religions, always we have belief system, dogmas, and you know, most of the religions in the world always say there are lots of things to talk about it. Come and believe. You know, organized religions always say, come and believe. In the Buddhist teaching, Buddha never said that. Buddha said, instead of come and believe, come and see. So then people can decide what is the best for you. I know most of Americans are very open-minded people. So when we say, come and see, or come and believe, people always pick, come and see. That means you have freedom to make the decision. So that's how I'm teaching around the world right now. Therefore, because of the combination Buddha and Jesus and Catholic Church and all those things, people really receiving my teaching. As you said, Karen, I'm a kind of people's monk. And, you know, I'm always understand what is going on in people's life accordingly. I have that skill, however, to change the world. So I don't think I'm changing the world more than the changing world. I think I change myself. So I'm not talking about, you know, when I'm giving my teaching, I'm not talking about the books. I'm talking about life. I don't want to give any facts and details and information. Now, modern world, people can Google and get whatever books they want. Why I'm giving another book reading to people when I go to a class? I always talking about from my heart, what I learned, what I practice as a monk. Then I say, this is the way I did it. This is the way I receive the benefit. If you see something beautiful, take it. If not, you can leave it. You know, so then easily people can make the decision. That's what I'm doing in the world right now.
You know, you, hold on, let me, I muted myself.
Yes. So Michael.
Yeah. Let me, I had a question.
I want to hear a little bit about Michael, but go ahead, John.
I just was going to mention that in Woodstock, I believe, is where the film Groundhog Day was filmed.
Yes.
A film about a guy who has to relive the same day every day for, we don't know how long, until he gets it right. What is getting it right? Does that... I when I hear that phrase in that movie, I kept thinking about one Buddhist concept that I do think about a lot. I don't know what it means, and that would be the middle way. Mm-hmm. Any enlightenment on that? I would like to hear.
So how about Michael introduce yourself first, then I can go to the next question, John? That's better?
Yep.
Yeah. So...
Oh, I'd rather hear about the middle way than hear about myself. just kidding. My name's Michael Fronczek. I was first introduced to Bhante by a group of meditation practitioners that I was practicing with 25 years ago. And that was in Detroit, Michigan. Where that class was being held, and I lived just outside of Detroit. And I was young and inspired, trying to learn to meditate in order to actually improve my clarity, my concentration, my focus. I was a student at the time, and I wanted to kind of bring those benefits of what I thought meditation might be able to bring into my life. And so I was continuing with regular meditation practice, and a teacher brought Bhante Sujata to our group. And when he came, he taught loving kindness meditation, which I had never done. And I was really inspired by that practice in itself. But I also think there was something about him as a character that was attractive or interesting to me. And I wanted to get to know him better. So my friend and I, we started visiting the temple more and more, and we were spending time. Bhante was new to the United States at that time, and they were developing a temple. So we would hang out, do things around the building with them. Bhante and I would spend time practicing English, just having some experiences going around, just kind of getting a little of, I think if I took it on as my duty to introduce him to Americana. And I became fascinated and interested about Sri Lanka and wanted to learn more. In the year 2000, I traveled with him to Sri Lanka to travel around the country for about less than a month. And it was a great experience. And I don't know what happened at that time, but it seems that I've just kept coming back. So I lived here for a few years in the early aughts, and then I came here to live again in 2011. And so I've been living here in Sri Lanka ever since. And Bhante and I constructed the Sanatha Suya Meditation Center, which is where I live and manage. And Bhante comes here a couple of times per year, helps us to do programs and things like that. And we're a meditation and retreat center located in the mountains at the center of the country. And so I can say that you asked about, well, I don't know maybe what the dynamic is between us, but it's pretty easy to say that it's noble friendship that kept us connected for 25 years. And so although we've switched countries, we only see each other a few times throughout the year, we work together very well. And so with the inspiration and the energy that Bhante creates in the world, that helps to facilitate and create resources for things that we do here in Sri Lanka, all the charitable work that we do. And working together, we've been able to produce a lot. So Bhante's doing for the world. He's never forgotten his home country. And in addition to running the center, we facilitate the charitable work that he does here.
And also he's my personal assistant now, full-time.
Yeah. Yeah. Full-time booking agent.
Yeah, full-time booking agent.
That's wonderful. That's good. It's working.
So now I go to the question John asked about the middle path. So that is the teaching of the Buddha. So if somebody asks, what is the teaching of the Buddha? So simple answer, Four Noble Truths and Eightfold Path. Eightfold Path, you know, that's the middle ground. So I can give you a little simple explanation. Nature of our mind, nature of our thoughts, feeling, and emotion always bouncing back and forth. You know, in the Sanskrit word, and also yoga teachers always using the word samadhi. So that's the eight limbs of yoga practice, and also Buddhist world also using that word called the samadhi. You know, English translation, I can see, they always say, when I'm asking what is samadhi means, then people say bliss. I get it. When you hear the word bliss, you know, as a person who speaks, you know, this is my second language, I don't feel it. What is bliss, right? So, you know, people don't get it. You know, people use the word, whatever translation there is. And so, because my background is Sanskrit, so for my education, so what is the samadhi means, we can break it to two syllables. One is sama, other one is dhi. Sama, dhi. Sama means tranquility. Okay, sama means tranquility or patience. Dhi means the mind state. Now you can make the word. What is the sama dhi means? Tranquil state of the mind. Now we have a big question. Why we don't have a tranquil state of mind? Because our emotions, our thoughts, our feelings always bouncing back and forth, like and dislike, good and bad. Always we live in duality, two things. Always our life going, floating in two things. Always like something, always don't like, you know, dislike something. Happy, unhappy, good, bad. If our life is always going on those two extremes, end of the day, how do you feel?
Confused.
Confused and exhausted. So that means we don't have a tranquil state of the mind. So if our mind's going back and forth those two extremes, we are not balanced. To find the balanced mind, you know, what we had to do, we had to find the middle ground. I call the middle ground is the holy ground. So person who is standing in the middle, he or she doesn't have any confusion with like or dislike. So that person understands this is the way it is, more than like or dislike. Is something good happen? You know, now think about something really good happen in the United States. People are so excited. That's another big issue. Too excited. So that much people get excited, they feel disappointments. If something going wrong, then they are upset about it. So therefore, is something good happened in your life? Oh, something good happened. Thank you. Grateful. You know, enjoy it. No need to get too excited about it. So something bad happened. You can say, oh, it's okay. Things happen like that. Then things may change. So therefore, you are accepting both the way it is. So that's what I call the middle ground. If you are maintaining yourself without those two extremes, you always balance. Then always you are in the middle. Then you are the one really enjoying the life. Otherwise, always people are in tension when you go to the extreme. That is my simple explanation, John. You know, there are a lot to say about it.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's enough for the world to understand.
Oh, you're provoking a whole list of questions, but I felt it. I felt it, you know, so... go ahead, Karen.
Well, I think we're... One of the things that has really made me the most content, which I equate with happiness, is a feeling of non-attachment to material things. And I've had a lot of loss of big material things and little. And when you come to a place of complete gratitude for health and survival and a good network of friends or family or spiritual community, for me, it has really made me see what truly matters. And I know that sounds cliche, but when you can accept loss through the belief of non-attachment, that has helped me tremendously throughout my life.
Okay, wonderful. I can say a few things about that. And so when you are attaching to something, there is always tension. When you are attaching to something, you cannot enjoy it. You're always worrying why you are not ready to lose. So therefore, I'm always thinking true love in the world is the detachment. Detachment is the true love. So once Buddha said, love is another word for attachment. Now think about all the love people are using in this modern world. I love it. I love you. I love you. That is attachment. So there's attachment. If you are detached, it doesn't mean you get rid of everything and everybody from your life. It is not. So you understand the nature of life, which is impermanence. Everything is subject to change. After you understand that truth, you have everything and everybody in your life. So that's how I always see myself content, because I'm ready to lose more than gain. If I gain something, always I can joyful. If I lose, how I'm going to handle it? So I don't know. Sometimes I'm always, it is not negative mindset for me personal, my personal practice. I always prepare for the worst.
Right? Me too.
Prepare for the worst. If something worst happened, I'm always thinking how I'm going to handle. Good part, always we can handle. You know, the difficult part, people don't know how to handle. That's why I said attachment brings you so much unhappiness, tension. So in Eastern countries, we have a monkey trap. So we are making a trap to catch a monkey. So we use the coconut shell. After we drink the coconut, we put the shell out. Then inside that coconut, we have little white meat. So monkeys are playing around and come and put their skinny hand inside that coconut shell. So then they fist it like this. And so then they cannot take the hand out. Right? But they are so attached to that piece of coconut. Then they are in pain. They take the hand out. So then they smell the coconut, then they lick it, they enjoy a little bit. After a few minutes later, they forget. They forget about it. Then they put the hands again. I think it's representing same human attachment. So now think of that moment, monkey is in trouble because hunter will come and get the monkey. Because attachment always losing our life. Attachment creating more problems in our life. Detachment creating more joy, balance, contentment in our life. So therefore, attachment doesn't have benefit. Attachment is little by little losing our life. So a person who attached things and people, he or she cannot enjoy the life. Why always they are worrying about it? Right, Michael? They are always worrying. So any thoughts about it?
You said it very well.
Well, yeah. Michael, you left your home, the United States. I would think I'm assuming that's where you grew up.
Yeah, Metro Detroit.
And you are living in Sri Lanka. Is that, do you like it? I've on my bucket list added one of the journeys to Sri Lanka through the Blue Lotus Temple. I really want to go sometime, and I hope to get to do that.
Right.
But is this where you're grounded now?
You know,
we just finished the trip.
Yeah. We just finished yesterday. We finished a 15-day journey around Sri Lanka with a group of people from United States and Austria, different countries. And it went great. I invite you to come. I hope you can. I do like it here. I get that question a lot from Sri Lankans. You know, Sri Lankans always ask me, they say, oh, how do you compare America and Sri Lanka? Which one's better? You know, are you happier here, happier there? I think after a kind of a total of 15 some years in the country, what I've come to learn is that happiness will just be with you wherever you are. Like I've seen a lot of people come here and, you know, and enjoy it and be happy, but I don't know if they'd be happy living here. And then, you know, I think about, you know, that they are looking forward to getting home, right? That, so you're happy where you feel is home. I feel like this place is home to me now because I have a strong work life and I really enjoy what I do. I love what doing this. I feel comfortable out here. I've been here for so long. My wife is from Sri Lanka. And really one of the great things that I have here is a good connection with the Buddhist community and the temples. Having known Bhante Sujata for so long, I've lived and I spent a couple of years living in the temple where he grew up. So I've developed a good network of friends within that community as well. So anytime I want to connect with them and I want to look to spiritual leaders, or if I want to find places to go and meditate or be kind of in that environment, it's possible for me. And of course it's a beautiful tropical island, so that doesn't hurt. But I really can say that you make your happiness no matter where you are. Bhante and I talk about it. You could be in a very difficult place and feel at peace, but you could be in a perfect place and feel at unease. So it doesn't matter where we are.
Yeah, and also other thing I want to add, you know, when you talk about the happiness, I know it's a very common word we are using. My understanding with my own personal practice, happiness doesn't work in life. You know, happiness always come to us because of something pleasurable. You know, those are pleasurable feelings. So I think, you know, I understand what people mean by that. But instead of happiness, I'm always telling people, be content. So be content. Happiness is outside experience. Contentment is inside experience. That's the way to say it?
Yeah,
it is. You know, always when we are eating your favorite ice cream, you are happy. Something like that, right? You know, you have favorite meal, we are happy. You know, something you are expecting, it's come, you know, way you don't like, then you are unhappy. That's why I said happiness doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Happiness is temporary. That moment you feel good, but later you feel bad about it again. So therefore, I'm always asking, build your inner confidence to have inner contentment. After you get into that mindset, nobody cannot change you. So you are 100% confident about your own spiritual journey. Even millions of thousands of people will come to you and say, you are doing crazy, but you don't buy it. Why? Your contentment is very powerful. So that is my experience.
Okay.
I was going to ask about the question of balance. A famous American, early American, Benjamin Franklin, was, I don't think he was particularly religious, but he was more of a Quaker than not. Mm-hmm. And he had a letter late in life that he wrote that he never saw a good war or a bad peace. Mm-hmm. And nonetheless, he had been a revolutionary and had also been a soldier, mm-hmm. and had to the extent, and then the conclusion of the Revolutionary War in the United States arranged for the confiscation by the state of his own son's property for his betrayal of the revolution. Nonetheless, mm-hmm. he was the author of the peace with England mm-hmm. and France, actually. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm wondering whether, you know, what is the middle way for the soldier, you know, for the politician, okay, mm-hmm. where the middle way can be a sewer in politics. That's a common metaphor in the United States, okay, that I don't think it means the same thing, obviously, as the concept you were talking about here. But
yeah,
how do we avoid bad compromises, for example? Just some
exactly.
Thoughts.
Yeah. So the way I feel, politicians and the shoulder, you know,
soldiers.
I think they can. I think they can try, but I don't think politicians, especially, they are practicing middle path. If they are really practicing middle path, I think they are not becoming politicians.
Very good answer.
There you go. All exactly. Right.
You they know. Don't want middle path.
Thank you. Know, I was wondering always, whether that.
Right, exactly. But I think they can try their best to maintain their middle path, but I don't say 100% they cannot, but it's difficult. Being in the war is not easy. So that work, always being in the war, they are going for, most of the people, going for guns and killing and, you know, war is war, no matter what. And so I think that kind of lifestyle, very difficult to find those teaching. It is so painful experience. Who enjoys the war?
Right.
Many people, we have some friends who are, and of course, there's many veterans and who meditate and who seek practice, especially looking to mindfulness techniques, cognitive behavioral techniques in order to deal with post-traumatic stress and other things that can come from the challenges of war. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that they cannot discover that mm-hmm. peace, or that they can't find it, that they can't practice it. But if we think about it, I think what Bhante is really referring to is, you know, actively when you're in a war, that doesn't seem like a time where right. you'd be able to really have that. Mm-hmm. There are many teachings in the Buddhist tradition that talk about people who were either involved in politics mm-hmm. or soldiering, or even in the underworld, criminals, murderers, who also eventually find peace through the middle path. Mm-hmm. So there's always yeah. that opportunity for us.
Yeah. I have experience with one of my students. He used to work in the military in Afghanistan. So I think you remember that too. He told me one day last year when he was in Sri Lanka. So in the Afghanistan, he blew whole school with children in the war. Now think about it. He put the bomb.
I was thinking of the same person.
Right, same person. Put in the, bomb and destroyed the whole school. So he was crying and emotional thinking about it. And he has a fear, lots of regret about it. And, you know, he came to me and with tears. And when he was in Sri Lanka, I'm very close with him too. And so then I mentioned to him, I know your mind is not balanced. You are so sad about it, lots of regrets. I think, you know, if you are worrying about it all the time, you are not bringing peace to your life. So instead of worrying about, you know, the regretting about what you did, about your past, how about learn the lesson from the past and work with children right now, instead of worrying about what you did. Now he start to work with children. How beautiful it is. He loves children. So therefore, then he's thinking, I have lots of bad karma. I said, no, yes, I understand lots of negativities are there. If you can do more positive, wholesome deed for the modern children in the world, children need lots of help right now. That means you are minimizing your negative energy you used to did it before. So that's what I'm suggesting.
That's interesting. That kind of segues into a little bit more about you that I'm interested in is as a survivor of domestic abuse, mm-hmm. I know that you have great reverence for your mother.
Right.
And there were very dark times that my love for my children is what got me through mm-hmm. some very difficult times. And I attended via Zoom your Mother's Day meditation just this past Mother's Day. And it was really special for me. It was lovely. And my children were all over. I had one in Spain, one in Mississippi. And so none of them were with me. So it was perfect. You were my family that day. So I loved that. And I know that your mother did not want you to become a monk. Mm-hmm. So how has that played out? And then a little bit about the work you do. I know you do so much good work for women and children in Sri Lanka and around the world.
Yeah. So I'm the only son in my family. I have a sister. Eastern countries, you know, only son people are really attached because he's the one carrying the family name and stay home. And that's a kind of their life insurance, right? I call it their life insurance. Their son is the life insurance because, you know, they stay, you know, he stay home and, you know, marry and taking care of the parents and until they die. So I don't know, because of that, maybe they are so attached to me. And my mother and father, they both said, no, you cannot become a monk at all. We never let you to go. And so I had to fight for that. I was fighting months and to get the permission because I was very young. Finally, they were tired with me and they gave me the permission to go. But still, they were waiting for me to come home, you know, the first few months before I become a monk, but I didn't return. So, however, I became a monk. They gave me the permission. Now my mother is always telling me, Michael knows really well. Michael is very close with my mother as his mother. And so my mother always reminding me, you are not belong to me anymore. But I'm so grateful I became your mother. I gave the birth. I gave you for the world. So you are belong to the universe, not for me. Even when she say that, she will cry, you know. So therefore, she's really accepting that. So then after many years later, when I'm living in the United States, I was thinking my first 21 years being in this country, I got everything free. Free healthcare, free education until the college. Everything is free in Sri Lanka. Free food for the monks. And everything is free here for, you know, most of the people. Maybe that's the one reason we are poor too. And everything is free. And so anyway, after I get all those benefits from these poor people, I left the country, my 21, then I was serving all the wealthy countries. Then I realized these poor people made the kite. Now all the Western world and Western people and play with the kite. Now get the benefit from me. So when I come to Sri Lanka, when people see what I'm doing in the world, Sri Lankan Buddhist people always say, we are so happy we raise you, we help you, you are serving the world, we are helping and practice meditation for other people in the world. We are so proud about it. They even looking at me, my spiritual journey in the Western world, Sri Lankan people really enjoy it too. Then one day I felt I had to be grateful to this nation. Because of them, I have everything. Now I'm serving in the whole world. So these people are so poor. So one day I was visiting one hospital to do the pregnant mother blessing. And so I felt so sad because being in the United States, these mothers, they don't have enough comfort. Then I was thinking I want to donate something even before Michael come to Sri Lanka. So then I asked the doctor, is there anything I can do to help these mothers? Then doctor said, they are fine. They are okay. And if you can, please donate as an incubator. So then I was thinking, what is that? You know, I never seen an incubator before. He showed me an old rustic machine. I call it a toaster oven. Anyway, that's my thing. Because I remember, right. Even Michael have seen it. Sometimes they put two babies into one basket because they don't have enough. So then I think 20 years ago, I raised funds. I donated the first incubator. Now 23 years, I think, we are doing this project. I don't know how many incubators we donated, so many. Then we donated incubators for the mothers and premature babies, especially babies born with jaundice, you know, yellow babies. They can recover. It's a phototherapy incubator. Phototherapy incubator we donated. That means quickly they can recover. And I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of babies we already saved because of those incubators. And after that, we donated the ultrasound scanner for the pregnant mothers. And during the COVID, we donated the COVID machine. It cost $45,000.
PCR machine.
Yeah, PCR machine. That means they are separating all the samples and feeding to the PCR machine. You know, that's the machine. Bio
technically we don't know exactly what it is, bioextractor or something but the hospital that Bhante donated that to is in Kandy here, and Kandy is a major hospital where people come from all over the island, because although the medicine is socialized and healthcare is free, resources are limited and pushed to their limits. And so that is why Kandy Hospital was selected.
So then after that, I was working with these mothers every year. Then I was watching and observing their life, because as a man, I don't know about the women's stuff, being a monk. And so when I'm listening to those women, I realized they have lots of emotional difficulties during that pregnancy, and there are physical changes, because as a man, I don't know, but now I try to tune into it more and more. I start to get that feeling. Then I was thinking, doing the incubator same time, I had to do something for these pregnant women. Then a few years later, I started this mother's retreat, you know, like 300 pregnant mothers every year practicing meditation, like a 2-hour program we are doing. And so I think that's amazing to me. I never heard last 20 years doing this project, even one child, you know, never came to me, one mother, I lost my child. I never heard any stories like that. All the mothers are doing really well, and the children are doing well. So I really believe, I have a sister, I have a mother. So because of the women, if the women doing really well in the world, they bring so much peace to the world. Now think about whether women, they have children or not, they can do lots of good things to bring peace to the world. Now just imagine if anytime one mother going wrong, whole world is going wrong. Now think about the mother going wrong, how she's going to raise children. The most of the issues children have in the United States, my observation, because they don't have good, what is called the upbringing with the parents. You know, mothers has lots of confusion in their mind. So therefore, I'm really believing we have to treat the root, you know, treating the mothers. That means we are helping to raise the good child. I call the little Buddhas. So that mother bring a tiny little Buddha into the world. And, you know, I have a story. More than, I think, 25 years ago, I did the pregnant mother blessing here in Sri Lanka. You know, you're a Sinhala teacher, right? Her son, now he is doing a PhD in the United States. I did the blessing for the both children when she was pregnant. Now that kid is now 25 years old. Now he's doing in the the United States his PhD program in the Ohio State. Right. So now think about it. Now I can see how this kid doing real well. He's keep contacting me. Parents are connected. So then I really believe in Karen and John, changing one generation, one mother, one father, one child. If we can do that, how beautiful this world. I have one experience, husband and wife, they married in front of me, first baby, they are from Austria. They married in front of me, first baby, I did the blessing, second baby, I did the blessing. I did all the Buddhist ritual for the babies. Finally, they made the decision, we need the proper spiritual background. So finally, they made the decision, whole family, officially, they want to convert to the Buddhist teaching. Right? Now, these two children, you know, they are coming within a week. They are coming to Sri Lanka, whole family, and going to enjoy 14 days here. Now, those two children, I don't know their connection with me. They are, I feel like they are part of my body now.
When I That's them, beautiful.
They are very excited. They are very happy. Even they see the dead body or the little animal dead, they want to bring him home and do the Buddhist ritual. You know, I can see amazing how these two children are doing in their life. They are 9 and 11 years old. Now think about that experience. Now think about one day, these two children become adults, become fathers, raising their children. How beautiful it is. So therefore, every time when I see those two children, I already changed one generation. Now think about the last many years doing this 300 pregnant mother retreat. How many hundreds of mothers and the babies I helped, we helped to change their lives. So that's my one of the biggest charity event I'm doing every year. This next month, July 9th, we are doing our 24th year we are doing. So that is one of my big charities I'm doing. I have more charities anyway. So
I love it. I can see how it fills you with joy doing that work. And one thing that fills me with joy is I love, love, love my record of joy.
Oh, that's good.
Nice. Because I have so much in my past that I could dwell on, and I could not forgive certain people, and I could just hold on to anger and angst. And I just, that is what my path has led me to very freely forgive. And I never even understood how beautiful forgiveness is, and it feels so good. And then the record of joy is, it helps me all the time when I actually take the time to sit and talk about things that I'm really proud of. There's a lot that each of us goes through in our lives that we don't give ourselves enough love,
right?
You know, self-love. Yeah. And I just look forward to the day that I am not walking on this earth, my children being able to have this gift. So I have given a couple of these away, and I love mine. It travels with me. It stays in a fireproof and waterproof bag when it's not with me. So,
and also, Karen, that book I call the Loving Kindness book too, because it is made by.
Well, it's made from all natural recyclable materials, which were created here in Sri Lanka out of elephant poo, out of elephant dung. So that dung paper has become a really great resource that's accessed. And as you see, it makes for beautiful paper. And the buttons on it are coconut, and it's sewn with coconut coir. And so it's all the way around. A green.
Yeah.
Do we have time for another question?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Please.
A while ago, I was listening to a debate on television between a follower of Mother Teresa, who I would describe the discussion as the poor are more virtuous than the rich. And therefore, well, the therefore is followed after that. And then his debating adversary was a member of one of these, a secondary priest with Joel Osteen, you know, who has a mega church in Texas. I think that costs $20 million. And, you know, he comes to church every morning or every Sunday in a limousine or some kind, I don't know. Anyway, and so he was talking about it's okay to be rich and get to heaven. You know, that was his kind of position. I wasn't comfortable with either one, to be truthful. Okay. I mean, I've seen a lot of evidence of real poverty, and yeah, there's some virtue, but there's a lot of really bad stuff too. And so I, as a matter of fact, I think there used to be a book called The Philosophy of Poverty. And then there was a critique called The Poverty of Philosophy. But in any event, is there a way to for people to have enough, you know, to is it necessary to be, you know, completely hungry, okay, in order to be unattached? And are you unattached if you're actually hungry? Some of those questions occur to me.
Yeah. So I'm always thinking have and have not is not the issue.
Okay.
Right? You know, I can see people who have a lot. I don't say enough. Enough is based on their practice. So, you know, now we met recently one of our friends. She has three houses and three has a helicopter. She has a big, what is called the fancy boat, and she has lots of things. but she's so worrying about her future and her income and all those things. Now think about her. She has a lot compared to other people, but still she's not really content or happy worrying about her life. So therefore I can see there are so many people in the world have a lot, still they're worrying, they are sad, they are mad, they are angry. So then I can see the people who come to, when I come to this country, like a eastern part of the world, they have lots of poverty. So they are not happy either. They are struggling to gain more. Because other people, they have more and they are struggle what? To find
balance. Inward, I guess.
Inward. So, therefore, if you have more, if you are greedy and selfish and don't share, I don't appreciate that. If you have more, please share while you are enjoying them. Right? So share doesn't mean you have to give everything away. No. So give, share, and same time you can enjoy. So I can see here in Sri Lanka, very poor, but I think compared to the world, this nation is a very generous nation in Sri Lanka. People love to give. Giving is a big part of their life. Whether they have enough or not, they are keep giving whatever they have. So therefore, I think it depends on the person and the personality, how they are going to enjoy their life. So, people always judging, looking outside world, all the material things they have. One time when I was in Phoenix, I was, my host family gave me a Jaguar to drive for my classes. So lots of judgments. So, the 2 weeks I have a car, it doesn't matter it's a Jaguar or it's a cheap car, it doesn't matter, for I just need a car. I was driving around the valley to my different classes. One person totally shut down because he saw I'm driving a Jag. So for me, it is just a car. So my purpose, even driving a Jag, I'm not taking it to Chicago, driving that Jag, going to my class to serve the world, because that's the only option they have to give me. People, based on what they see, they are making all the judgment. He's another fake monk or something like that. Later, he figured it out. That's not mine. And now we are very close friends anyway. And also, the podcast too with me after that.
Right.
That's right. A great Thank story. You. I love Thank that. You. Yeah. And this hour has passed way too quickly. There's so much more we can talk about. I'm going to send Michael an email of thanks and gratitude and a few other things and make a donation and all of that. But there's a specific question and that I do want to ask in that email. And I just want to say thank you both. I know after 14 days of traveling the country with a group, you must be exhausted. And no, so your time spending with us this morning is much appreciated.
Really? Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John. Thank you so much. We really
thank you.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll be in touch again at some point. All right.
We are here.
I like to close the shows we do here with a saying that it's late, but everything comes next. Take care.